Morris back to pass. Looks end zone. Has his man. Has the touchdown. Terrence Tolliver. Got a shot here. Did he make it? Yes, he did. What a catch. Oh, my. Luke Tasker touchdown.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. So we've got a great episode this week, including a wonderful interview with Justin Dunk, our guest this week. Fans are really going to get into that. But unfortunately, I kind of have to start with something that's not so great. And I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't know. Maybe it's the off season and there's like no outlet for our rage right now. But I've noticed, especially on Twitter, that there's been a lot of fans just ripping into one another. And sometimes it's turned like just nasty. Not necessarily like personal attacks nasty. And like, for instance, about a month ago during WrestleMania, there was obviously a lot of people out there tweeting about WrestleMania. It's the Super Bowl of professional wrestling. And as I wrote for Three Down...
It's the Grey Cup of professional
wrestling. Okay, you know what? You're right. It's the Grey Cup. This is a Canadian football podcast. Exact. Great, great, great job. It's the Grey Cup of pro wrestling. And, you know, I wrote for Three Down Nation that there are quite a few CFL fans who happen to be wrestling fans. Wrestling, just, you know, whenever it's going through its ups and downs, there's times when it's super popular and there's times when it's not so popular. We're in one of those times right now where it's not exactly, it's not, you know, you're not seeing guys out wearing Austin 316 t-shirts like you did, you know, almost 20 years ago now. But it seems to be that CFL fans and wrestling fans kind of, there's a lot of commingling there. And I'm not exactly sure why that is, but that's just the case that it is. So there was a lot of CFL fans out there tweeting about WrestleMania. And there was this one guy who I'm not going to name, who works for a website that covers the CFL that I'm also not going to name, because I'm not here to get people to go out there and rip this guy a new one. He got ripped a new one bad enough the night of. But he started putting out these tweets, basically calling people who watch professional wrestling morons. Now, as someone who was watching WrestleMania and was on Twitter at the same time, because, you know, you're watching it, you're tweeting with people. It's fun. It's live interaction with people from all around the world who are interested in the same things you are. I kind of took exception to this, and it was the start of this just vitriolic attacking that people were doing in the last month or so. Like, I know that you were a fan of wrestling, and I know that you're not, you know, I wouldn't put you as like you're you know diehard or anything, but like to attack people for their likes and the things that they enjoy, it came off to me as just really arrogant and that type of stuff pisses me off. And to be fair, I'm not exactly the person who goes out there and is what you would call calm or anything like that. Like, I've been known to be a jerk and stuff like that, but I don't know. This just really pissed me off. And like I said, it was kind of the start of this whole month of just fans going at one another. But this to me was just totally uncalled for.
Yeah, too. You know, you just basically calling people dumb that watch wrestling. And, you know, you can dislike something, that's fine. Like, I'm not a big fan of certain TV shows. But I'm not going to say, like, oh, if you watch that, you're an idiot or anything like that. Like, I grew up in a pretty big boom period in wrestling, you know, in the late 90s when, you know, Stone Cold was around and Rock and all that stuff. And I was a huge Bret Hart fan. And I was a huge wrestling fan back then. And, you know, I don't really keep up with it anymore, but I still have a, you know, appreciation for it. I respect the athletes that are in the WWE or any professional wrestling. So to go after people just for enjoying something just seems dumb to me. So yeah, it's just a mean thing to do, and I don't get it at all.
Well, and you would think that someone who likes the CFL would be a little more sympathetic towards people who have to deal with garbage like this, because as a CFL fan, this is the type of crap that you deal with from the NFL-only people people who think the CFL is garbage and is not worth your time and is crap football. You would think that someone who purportedly covers this league would be smart enough to recognize the similarities and go, you know, maybe I've had to deal with this and the things that I like. Maybe I shouldn't do this to someone else's, like, even if it's not my cup of tea. Like what you want. I don't care what people like. If you like wrestling, you like wrestling. If you don't, you don't. But why does this one person think that they are the overseer of all things entertainment and can dictate and insult people on what they like? It's asinine. It's like, you know, the go-to insult is, oh, you know, it's fake, right? Well, no shit. I've known it's fake since I was like 7 years old. You're not pulling the wool. Oh my God, wrestling's not real. The matches are predetermined. Oh no, my worldview is shattered. But you know what else is fake? Television shows and movies. So if your main go-to that you don't like pro wrestling is that it's quote unquote fake, which is a word that I hate being associated with it, because tell the guy who, and especially WrestleMania, Shane McMahon, 45 year old man jumps 20 feet in the air and lands on the table. Tell me that's fake. It's not fake. He got hurt. That happened. That's a human jumping from a ridiculous height, slamming himself through a table for our entertainment. And you might not like that, but you have to respect these people and just respect the people in general who like things that you don't. It's just, you can probably hear the anger in my voice because it just infuriates me when people do crap like this.
Well, that's the example that I use, you know, like, you know, television, movies are all scripted, like it's just scripted entertainment. And you look at guys that wrestled back in the 90s or the 80s, and these guys have serious injuries. Like, you know, you look at, you know, Bret Hart, for example, his knees are all messed up. He's had multiple surgeries. Or, you know, Hulk Hogan, he can barely walk now. And all these guys that just go through hell, you know, entertaining people, you know, to call it fake is not a good word. It's scripted, yes, that's predetermined outcomes. But, you know, these guys go through serious injuries, and it's just as hard as any other professional sport on the body. So to call it fake is wrong.
Do these people watch movies and think that that's actually, like, Robert Downey Jr. is not an actor. He's actually Tony Stark, and he's actually flying in the Iron Man suit. Do they watch The Revenant and think that Leonardo DiCaprio actually fought a bear? And that's not Leonardo DiCaprio. He's not an actor. He's a real person. Like, the whole fake thing, just, it blows my mind that people still use that. It's 2016. The idea of wrestling being a legitimate sport is something that we gave up 40 years ago. So to bring that up as a negative in your dismissing of it, it honestly, it makes you look stupid when you do that, because it's like you think that you know this thing that everyone else doesn't know, that everyone else has known for nearly 50 years.
Yeah, it's still real to me, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. But this wasn't the only instance. There was a lot more. There was this kind of weird back and forth between members of the Red Blacks fans and Ryder fans over Ottawa's going to, apparently, with their new uniforms that are going to be coming out in about a week, they're going to be putting hashtag RNation on their pants. And this sparked anger from one particular Saskatchewan fan that I saw, who put it upon himself to be like, our nation is a ripoff of Rider Nation. And are we really getting in dick measuring contests over marketing slogans? Is that what this offseason has come to now?
Yeah, it's just stupid. I mean, like, I'm not a big fan of having hashtag anything on the uniforms, but to go to that degree to say, oh, you're ripping off our team is just, you know, just shows some of the, like, not all Rider fans are bad, but the arrogance of some of them is just over the top. And, like, get over it. Like, who cares? You know, it's our nation, Rider Nation. You know, I'm kind of sick of the whole nation thing with associating with fan bases. But, you know, to jump on someone or a certain team because you think they're ripping off your slogan is just stupid.
Well, Raider Nation was the first one I ever heard of, and that was well before I ever heard of a Rider Nation. Where was Rider Nation in 1997 when that team was going through bankruptcy and nearly folded? Like, let's not kid ourselves, and this is not, I'm not trying to be insulting here, but let's not kid ourselves, Rider Nation is fairly new. Raider Nation, which, let's be honest, that's got to be obviously where they got it from, has been around a lot longer. So if you really want to get into a pissing contest over who had what when, Oakland Raider fans can look at you and be like, we were Raider Nation long before Rider Nation was even a thought.
Exactly. And, you know, I've heard of Leaf Nation. And
Jeff Reinbold likes to use Ticats Nation to describe Ticat fan. I'm with you. I'm not a huge fan of the nation thing. But that's kind of where, you know, if someone wants to use it, like, go nuts. I don't care. Like, it's not that big a deal. And you brought up the arrogance factor of this particular Rider fan. He sent out a message saying to one Ottawa supporter, if you think that the ratio of Rider fans to Red Blacks fans is even 20-1, you're delusional. I got news for you, buddy. You're delusional. There's what, a million people in Saskatchewan? And I hate to break it to you, but not everyone likes sports. There are a lot of people out there who hate sports. hate sports the way that that jackass was talking about hating wrestling. People who look at any sport and go, that's dumb. So even if we're being generous and say that every single person in Saskatchewan likes not only football, but is an avid Rough Riders fan, that's a million people. And yeah, you can scatter a couple hundred thousand or so around the country or whatever, but let's use a million because it's a nice round number. So at 20 to 1, that would mean that there are 50,000 Ottawa Red Blacks fans. That is idiotically a small number. I have been to Ottawa last year, went to a game. The stadium holds about 25,000 people, I think. The place was packed. I was walking down the streets wearing Ticats gear because whenever I go to an opposing city I went to Montreal, I wore Ticats stuff. I went to Moncton, wore Ticats stuff. Went to Ottawa, wore Ticats stuff. And I saw people wearing Red Black stuff. They had Red Black stuff in stores all over the city, and I was getting chirped by people. Oh, you know, Ottawa's gonna win this weekend, and the day of the game, oh, Ottawa's gonna kick Hamilton's ass and all that sort of stuff. And some people were wearing Red Black gear, some people weren't. To think that Rider Nation is 20 times larger than quote-unquote our nation, like, you're an idiot, like a complete idiot to think that. That's it's insane.
Yeah, that's a good way to test a fan base, is to walk around the city and see if you get chirped if you're wearing, you know, the opposing team's colors. Because I'm sure if you walked around, say, Toronto in a Ticats uniform, you're not going to get very much chirping, you know? So if you walk around a city and you're getting chirped, then that's a good indication on, you know, the height of the fan base. Because if they don't say anything, then you know that there's not many fans out there.
Yeah, and like maybe it had to do with Ottawa being really good and people are jumping on the bandwagon, but that happens. That's what happens in all sports.
Look at the Blue Jays. I mean, you know, 5-10 years ago, I grew up in Ontario, and all my friends were, you know, rabid Blue Jays fans. Now all of a sudden, everyone has a Blue Jays hat, Blue Jays jersey. You know, they're everywhere. Even in Edmonton, you see Blue Jays gear all over the place. If a team gets really good, then there's going to be people jumping on the bandwagon, and that's what happened with the Blue Jays right now.
For sure, for sure. There was one more little spat that kind of just encapsulated how silly and maybe how long this offseason has gotten. It was about the BC Lions and their new jerseys. As we know, we talked about last week, and we will probably talk about it in the next show when we actually have the jerseys. The league is coming out with new jerseys and new uniforms for every team, and BC was kind of teasing what their uniforms would look like, and it looked like there was going to be a heavy dose of black in this uniform. And there were some red-black supporters, one in particular. Again, I'm not going to name anyone because this isn't about outing people or anything like that. This is just about getting things off my chest, because this stuff, you know, I have this outlet and I'm allowed to do this. This one red black supporter was like mad that BC would dare use black. It seemed to be the reasoning was, well, Ottawa had black first. Well, Ottawa's folded twice, so you kind of lose your exclusivity over a color. And not only that, it's a goddamn color. Like, Ottawa does not own the market on the color black. Calgary uses black jerseys, and before the show you and I were talking about, we hope that they get away from that, but the case may be they do. Hamilton has been using black jerseys for as long as I can remember. So this idea that one team can own a color, it again, just what? This is so stupid. And the thing is, BC, black has been part of their uniform, so it's not like BC's deciding out of the blue, we're just going to change to black because blacks look cool. They've used black before. Like, this whole thing, and even talking about it, I feel like a fool, but like just everything about this has just been so silly.
Yeah, I agree that the black in the Stampeders uniform should go, because we don't need two teams with red and black. I'd like them to go, not because Ottawa owns black or anything like that. It's just I prefer the red and white uniforms on Calgary, and I think it's silly to have two teams that have red and black. But yeah, I'm also glad that the BC Lions are going to black and orange, you know, more black in the uniform. I didn't really like the all orange uniforms or jerseys of the BC Lions, so I'm glad to see that they're incorporating more black into the jersey of the BC Lions, because I think it's a better look. So yeah, to say that your team owns a color is just ridiculous and silly.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you about the BC ones. They didn't really change their jerseys all that much when they did that massive redesign about 4 years ago.
No,
I think they just kind of took like that silly black piping off the jerseys, and it essentially stayed the same. So BC hasn't really changed their uniforms in quite some time, and they wanted to make a change, and they're making a change. And the thing is, those gunmetal gray jerseys that they wore were super popular amongst their fan base. They probably saw that and said, our fans want something a little darker. They don't want all this orange. Mm-hmm. And they're listening to their fans, and to me, that's a good thing.
From what I remember, they sold a ton of those jerseys, so whatever can make them more money, you know, put more money in the coffins is a good thing. And obviously they don't like the all orange creamsicle look like I don't like it. So yeah, I'm happy about that change.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for letting me unburden my anger on this. Let's get on to some news. How about that?
Let's do it.
Okay, so the big thing that came out is the Hamilton Tiger Cats are on the verge of hiring an offensive coordinator, and it is not the guy that I would have ever expected. It is McMaster head coach Stefan Potasek. This took me completely off guard. This is an interesting move, to say the least.
Yeah, I didn't see this coming at all. Like, I didn't even, you know, I never thought that he would be the guy that they brought in. You know, it's an interesting move. He's a Canadian guy. You know, he's had a lot of success at the McMaster program. He took them, they won a Vanier Cup a couple years ago. They were in the final, I believe, the year after. So this guy's had some good experience being a head coach. Now we just got to see if he can, you know, step up to the next level and be successful as the offensive coordinator of the Ticats. And, you know, it should be the same playbook, I think. You know, I think he'll just be calling the plays that that Austin has already implemented into the offense. So, you know, we were talking about it last week, and we didn't think that they would bring in a new offensive coordinator. We thought that Austin would be the guy calling the plays, but now we got Steph Potasek, I believe his name is, coming in. So, yeah, it should be interesting to see if he can step up in the next level.
Yeah, it's like, I've seen a lot of people compare this to the Greg Marshall hiring about 10 years or so ago. I don't think those, you know, he was a MAC head coach, Potasek's a MAC head coach. I don't think that this is comparable, because Marshall came in and was the head coach and like the face of the franchise, essentially, because MAC coach coming in, like, oh man, like blah 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 blah. This, I think, is different. He's coming in as an offensive coordinator. He's coming in, this is a big jump, because you see a lot of these coaches that come from the college ranks, they tend to be a positional coach and move up. This is a major leap. He's a guy here now. But I agree with you. I think the offense is still going to be very Austin-centric. It's still going to be his terminology, still going to be his plays. He said so when he was asked during minicamp, but what they're doing with the offensive coordinator position. And it was like this, it wasn't Tommy's offense, it was our offense. We both had a hand in building this offense, and that's going to stay the same. So this season, he's, you know, Steph's probably going to come in and do more of what Austin wants, and over time maybe implement some of his ideas. Because one of the things that McMaster has been really good at, and I say this as a very fervent MAC hater, I went to U of T and hated McMaster because a lot of my friends went there and rubbed it in my face that their football team was a lot better than Toronto's, but their offenses were always really, really good. So this isn't, he's got an offensive mind, and all that success he had at MAC, like you mentioned, he Vanier Cup victory, the first in school history. He's been to a couple more. McMaster, just a couple years ago, they lost to Montreal in the Vanier Cup. And so McMaster's always been a program, and to see him make this move, you would think, you know, he's basically, he was going to be the coach there until he didn't want to be the coach there anymore. And it just shows that he's got aspirations, and maybe I know for a fact that other CFL teams had been interested in him before. I've been told the Ticats were even interested in him in a coaching role at some point. So I know that he's been offered jobs, or at least been asked to come in and interview for them, and he's always turned them down. No, I want to stay at Mac. Now he makes this move. He must see something here that gives him the idea that this is where he wants to be.
But he's coming into a pretty good situation, you know, like, to learn from a guy like Austin is a pretty big opportunity. And if he does really well at the offensive coordinator position, maybe he could be a future head coach in this league. You know, I think he has the talent to maybe step up and be a head coach someday.
I absolutely agree. And I think coming in, I think a lot of the problems, especially some of the stuff I heard about Greg Marshall, was that he didn't really have the respect of the guys in the room, especially the American players, some of the American players, because he came from the CIS and they didn't look at that as big time coaching experience. Potasek's going to come in. He's going to be an offensive coordinator, which, like I said, that's a big job. But at the same time, he's not starting off right at the top. He's going to work his way up there. I can absolutely see in 5, 6, 7 years, he starts getting offers to be a head coach in the CFL. And we also can't put past the fact he's a Burlington kid. Went to Nelson, was a star at Laurier. Like, he's from this area. So making the move from McMaster to the Ticats, his family doesn't have to move. It's a very easy transition, and one that I think, personally, I think it's going to work out. I really, really do.
Yeah, it's got to be a big deal for him to get this position. I mean, like you said, he grew up in Burlington. He must have had some, you know, usually that's pretty close to Hamilton, so maybe he watched the Ticats growing up, and, you know, he's not going to take this opportunity lightly. This is a big deal for him, I'm sure. So he's going to, you know, I hope he does a great job and has more opportunities in the future because of his position as offensive coordinator with the Ticats.
And this, we can't deny this too. Getting Stefan Potasek is a great PR move. And I know that's not the reason the move was made. He has earned this right to be the team's offensive coordinator. But losing Tommy Condell so close to the start of the season, we ourselves were like, this is not good. This kind of spins it. And while it's still not a great situation, you never want to be hiring. Like, they haven't even announced officially the hiring of Stefan Potasek as the offensive coordinator. But you don't want to be hiring coaches, especially coordinators, early May, 5 days before the draft, 3 weeks before the start of rookie camp. Like, this is not an ideal situation. But of all the people they could have brought in, the one that's going to generate the most positive headlines and really, not to be dismissive, but like fluff piece stories about how great this is, as I mentioned, you know, Burlington kid, blah, 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 that sort of stuff, would be hiring the local university's very, very successful head football coach.
Yeah, the Tigers have history of doing this, right? I mean, like you mentioned before, Greg Marshall, Canadian coach, Marcel Belfay, Canadian head coach. So, you know, and they had very varying levels of success. Greg Marshall had one good year where they got the Tigers to the playoffs and the others weren't so great. But Marcel Belfay had a couple of good years with the Tigers, you know, hovering around 500, always in the playoffs, got to the Eastern Final the 1 year. So, you know, I have confidence in Canadian coaches. I think they can do a great job if given the opportunity. And I love to see them get the opportunity to coach in the CFL.
Yeah, this is going to bear watching. And to me, this is an exciting thing to see happen. It's going to be interesting to see how a Canadian university coach is going to adjust very quickly to the professional game. I'm looking forward to watching Potasek put an offense in here and see what it can do.
Yeah, for sure.
So I mentioned offhand minicamp. That happened about a week ago now. The last time we recorded was on the start of it, and now we're recording after it's over. And out of minicamp has come a couple of stories, the biggest of which is that Eric Norwood has been released by the Ticats. This, I'll be honest, as much as the offensive coordinator news, this one caught me just as equally off guard.
Yeah, it caught me off guard too. I guess we shouldn't be too surprised because he would be on the 6-game injured list if he was still with the Ticats. But it's just another sign of how football's a business and it's kind of cold at times. You know, this guy has done a great job for the Ticats over the years when he's not been injured. And, you know, to release him when he's injured, it's a tough situation for him. But, you know, that's a big piece that's gone from the D-line. You know, you look at the pieces that have disappeared from this defensive line this offseason. It's quite a big chunk. You got Balky, Norwood, Hickman. I'm sure there's another name in there, but
Brian Hall,
like, he goes to the Argos. So, you know, that's a lot of people gone from this D-line that were there last year. It's going to look a lot different. I guess they saw some guys at minicamp maybe that they think that can come in and do a good job replacing Norwood at a cheaper price. Maybe they look at some of the guys like Tracy, some of the guys they already have under contract that can come in and do a great job replacing him. So, yeah, he's going to be missed. When he was in there, he was a great talent. And, you know, he did a great job for the Ticats. And I hope that he signs on somewhere else. I hope it's not the Argos, like most of the guys have gone to this offseason, it seems. But I'm kind of mixed feelings on the whole situation. You know, I wish he could still be with the team. But, you know, injury troubles have plagued him over the years. So I can kind of see why they did it.
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head, the injury troubles and minicamp. When trying to figure out why this was done, I didn't think it was a salary thing because, like you said, he was probably going to be 6-game, maybe even 6-game twice. That salary's not going to count against the cap, so it wasn't that. And then I was just he didn't seem to be an attitude problem whatsoever. I remember a couple years ago he was benched and took it very well and then came back and was a beast, became an all-star that year. So I was just trying to wrap my brain around how this could have happened, and you said it, minicamp. I'm thinking they saw some guys in minicamp that, like you said, they can get for a cheaper price that can do what he does, and that's not meant to diminish him in any way. I was a big Eric Norwood fan. I liked what he did with this team. I remember the 4-sack game he had against Edmonton in 2014. It was awesome. But if you in this world, you sign Ted Laurent, you sign John Chick, Zach Caleros is due a giant contract extension at some point. For all those big ticket items, you have to save money elsewhere, and this is just one of those unfortunate sides of the business. And the thing that kind of hurts the most for me is that you read his comments after he was released, and he understands it. He said, look, I'm hurt. I can't perform. They need someone who can. They let me go. It's the way it goes. he's not shut the door on coming back to the Tie Cats. Maybe he gets healthy and he comes back. Maybe he does go elsewhere and succeeds. But to see a player take it that well and to not really harbor a grudge or to make it personal or anything like that, that for me personally makes it a lot harder to watch him get cut, because he understands the nature of this business. And I hope that wherever he ends up landing, he ends up having a stellar career. And I hope he's one of those guys that we look back on and go, damn, that was one we shouldn't let get away.
Yeah, it shows his character. You know, he doesn't make a big deal out of it. You know, he doesn't complain about it. He understands the deal. It shows that he's a really good person off the field and a great player on the field. So, yeah, I hope he lands on his feet somewhere else after he comes back from his injury. I know it was a devastating one, and I hope he's the same player that he was when he was on the field with the Ticats, you know, dominating, getting sacks. I just hope it's not with the Argos, like I said earlier.
Yeah, could you imagine if he goes there, they'd have essentially Hamilton's 2014 starting defensive line, minus Ted Laurent. So, hey, I said last week and caught a little bit of flack, but not a ton, that I think the Argos are going to be very good this year. And if they were to get a guy like Norwood and hey, he could perform the way we know he could perform, that defensive line just looks that much better.
Yeah, maybe sign him like halfway through the season and add a big piece to their D-line. I mean, that'd be a scary thought.
Yeah, that would be. He wasn't the only piece of defensive line news that came out. And again, this came out of minicamp. We talked last week about some of the veteran players that were invited to the Ticats minicamp. Jeff Tisdale, David Lee, like some of the guys they brought in whose names were kind of like popped off the pages. Like, oh, I remember these names. One of those names was Zach Anderson. He was a defensive tackle with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He has signed with the Ticats. And this to me is one of those underrated signings. I know that Anderson wasn't always consistent in Winnipeg, but I think this is a guy who in this system playing with the guys that this D-line still has left, I think he could end up being highly productive, and I see him possibly being the replacement for Brian Hall.
Yeah, he had a pretty good stretch in Winnipeg. I know that, like you just said, he wasn't hugely consistent, but, you know, he put up some pretty good numbers over the years, and I think he still has lots left in the tank, and he could be a big addition to the defensive line that has lost a lot of pieces this offseason. So, you know, bringing in a guy like him is a good thing. You know, it helped out in the middle there with, obviously have Big Teddy, who's one of the best in the league, and, I wasn't sure if they were going to play another Canadian beside him, or if they were going to go international, and maybe this is a sign that they're going to go international with a guy like Anderson.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see this. That's what training camp's all about, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So now we can get into some CFL news, and we actually have some breaking CFL news. Jonathan Jennings has signed a contract extension with the BC Lions through 2018. I know Jennings was on a rookie deal. I know you and I didn't prep for this. I just saw the news come across my screen, so we're in a little bit of uncharted territory here. What do you think about this decision for the Lions to give Jennings an extension, likely with a pay increase, after what was basically a little less than half a season's worth of admittedly stellar play?
Well, I know that I heard the rumblings that he wanted a new deal because, you know, he was making, like you said, a rookie's salary, and that's not very much in the CFL, around $50,000 or something. I'm not sure, but yeah, I heard that he wanted a pay raise because of, you know, he'd probably be the starting quarterback this year. So I'm not hugely surprised by it, but I think it's a good move by the Lions. You know, we've talked about a lot in the past that you see guys come into the league and light it on fire and then kind of fall off. But I don't know. I'm hesitant to jump on his wagon and say that he's going to be a long time great CFL quarterback. But, you know, you kind of just get the feeling with him. But I've gotten the feeling with a lot of players as well. You know, Stephen Giles comes to mind, a lot of players that I thought were going to be great that kind of fell off. But I see it as a good thing. You know, no contract's guaranteed, so if it doesn't work out, they can just cut him. And they got Travis Lulien there. I know that Wally Bono said it's going to be an open competition in training camp between Lule and Jennings, but I think that Jennings has the upper hand in that deal, especially with this news coming out that he has a contract extension and through 2018. That's that's 3 more years, so that's a pretty lengthy contract. So yeah, I'm not hugely surprised, and I'm pretty happy with the deal for the BC Lions because he's a pretty exciting player and he should be fun to watch if he keeps up that high level of play that he did in a half a season last year.
Yeah, my only concern is that he hasn't done it over a consistent long period of time. But yeah, if he shows the flashes that he showed last year, if that's continued, yeah, this is going to be an exciting player to watch. And as far as I'm concerned, my team, not my team, more exciting players, better players in this league is good for the league as a whole.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's just one of those quarterbacks that generates excitement. You know, you watch him, he can get out of situations. He makes plays on the go. He catches touchdowns. I mean, he had that nice catch in the end zone last year on that flea flicker type play. So this guy's an all-around athlete. And like I said, if he can keep up that high level, then he's going to be a joy to watch for the next 3 years.
You got to wonder if the hype surrounding him is going to make the Lions quarterbacks very highly touted in fantasy this year.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting idea. I mean, he'd probably come at a low price. And it might be a big surprise. He might put up some big numbers.
Yeah, you and I don't really talk about our fantasy league on here very much. I assume it's because you don't want to talk about how I drubbed everybody last year. But
well, I beat you twice.
You did, but I won the title, and that's all that really matters.
That's true.
But yeah, I got to think, anyone out there doesn't know, Mike and I are in a fantasy league. We've been, 2 years now we've done it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike's the commissioner, and last year I won the championship, and never really gloated on the show about it. But I'm going to do that now just because I felt that talking about Jennings gave me an opportunity to bring it up.
Are you going to draft Jennings then?
We'll see. We'll see. Hey, you know, if last year's any indication, whomever I draft is going to be a star anyway, because my team, if we're being perfectly honest, and I know this is probably boring to a lot of listeners out there because nothing's worse than hearing someone talk about their fantasy team. My team was pretty damn dominant. You got to admit that.
It was very dominant.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the Jennings contract extension, we're going to have to see how that plays. A lot of stuff that we got to see play out. And man, with it being early May, we're so close to the start of the season. This is, I hope you can hear the excitement in my voice because I can't wait for this offseason to finally be done.
Yeah, it seems like a lot. It's been stretching on and on and on. But, we're getting close. Camps will be starting up soon. And then before you know it, it'll be late June and we'll get into the real games.
We'll be sitting in some beautiful stadium watching some football and loving life.
Exactly.
Did you see the controversy that kind of sprung up around Chris Jones and he had his day with the cup and he went down to, you know, middle of bloody nowhere, Tennessee, and went to some cornbread festival or something ridiculous like that, and he was wearing Rider gear, and this really seemed to tick off Eskimo fans?
Yeah, I did see that. I think that you could go both ways. You know, he's underemployment of the Rough Riders now, so he can't really be wearing Edmonton gear, but he did not win the Grey Cup with the Riders, obviously. So, you know, people that don't know the CFL down there would see him and be like, oh, so you won the Grey Cup with that team, with Saskatchewan. And, you know, that's what's implied by him wearing Rough Rider gear when he has the Grey Cup. So I can see the anger coming from Edmonton fans because he didn't win the Grey Cup with the Riders. He won it with Edmonton. So why is he wearing the Saskatchewan logo?
Yeah, I think, again, this goes back to kind of the stuff we were talking about at the top of the show, where just the anger that's been coming out due to all the offseason being so bloody long. I think this is honestly much ado about nothing. I can see why Eskimo fans would be a little peeved, but I also think that they're looking for reasons to be peeved at this guy because he jilted them. Like, he left to go somewhere else and what have you. And I understand that, yeah, he probably shouldn't have been wearing Saskatchewan stuff, but they're paying him a lot of money. He knew that he was going to be, you know, he was going to be photographed, he's going to be videotaped, all that sorts of stuff. This is a way to get that brand out there and get that logo out there. And I do understand some of the anger, but I think it's misplaced or at least just unnecessary. You won the championship. We all know you won the championship. Be happy with the championship. To hell with this guy. He's not there anymore. You shouldn't even be thinking about him.
Yeah, I kind of think about it like, imagine Ken Austin won a Grey Cup in Hamilton and then signed with Toronto, and then he's parading around with the Grey Cup with the Argos gear on. It kind of get under my skin a bit too.
To be honest with you, I would not give a rat's behind because that just means Hamilton won the Grey Cup. That would take me through the entire offseason. No matter what anyone said to me, I'd just be like, Ticats won the Grey Cup, so I don't care.
Yeah, it's been a long time, my friend. A long time. We're due.
We are due. Another bit of news out of Saskatchewan. And again, it seems like this week everything's just caught me off guard. That caught me off guard. This bizarre retirement of Terrius George. Did you hear the story behind this?
Yeah, I heard that he got charged with some domestic violence and then retired. That's all I've heard about it, really.
Yeah, so I guess he got into some altercation with his wife or girlfriend or whatever it was. And then instead of, I guess, dragging the team through this or making this a spectacle, he just up and retired. And, you know, again, this is something you see people out there. They're making judgment calls. There's people out there congratulating him on a great career, and there's people getting pissed off that people are congratulating him on a great career because of the reasons he retired. Look, we live in a society, like, I've been batting this around in my brain for a bit because I don't know how we can, do we separate separate the man from the action? You know what? Like it's tough. Do we look at him as a player and then just as a person and a lot of other sorts of stuff? But what I kind of came to a conclusion with, and I'm curious if you will follow me on this. He hasn't been convicted of anything. Like this is an allegation, and we live in a society where innocence is presumed until guilt is confirmed, and yet this comes out, and a lot of people are ripping this guy, saying he's a garbage human being and all that stuff. What if it's just not true? And I'm not saying like this is not victim blaming. Like this is a very touchy subject to get into. But what if this altercation is not as terrible as we have been kind of led to believe?
Well, that's the thing. You know, everyone presumes guilt before any evidence is presented. So we don't know what happened. We don't know the situation. We don't know if any of these allegations are true. So to make judgment calls this early is inappropriate. And, you know, you can't judge the guy. You know, we don't know what happened. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we weren't there. So we don't know what the situation is.
Is this another case of, you know, off-season rage being needing to find a home somewhere, maybe?
Yeah, and maybe people are just mad because they didn't want him to retire, you know? Maybe they wanted him on the field. So, you know, it could be a selfish thing as well from a fan perspective.
Yeah, and, you know, he played for Saskatchewan. He was kind of well-known for being a writer. And their fans sometimes like to throw this code of conduct that they have that players have to adhere to and all this other sorts of stuff, where they kind of use that to make themselves a little holier than thou. And maybe this is one of those things where this unfortunate situation occurs and opposing team's fans are using this as a, like, you're no better than anybody else. Like, stop trying to stand up on your pedestal and point down at everybody else. It's just, again, this is an uncomfortable topic to discuss because we don't, like you said, we don't know the facts.
Yeah.
So I can't make a judgment call on whether this guy is an abuser or not. We really don't know what the hell has gone on. So I think people who are upset about fans congratulating him on a great career, again, I think that's a little misplaced.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we don't know what happened, so we can't make the judgment call. I mean, you look at like a, you know, a public case, like kind of similar to this, is Mike Smith, Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys. You know, he was charged with something and then recently it was just dropped because, you know, it wasn't found to be what he was accused of. So, you know, these things happen. People get in altercations and then later on you realize that it wasn't as bad as we assumed it was. So,
well, and the thing is, the initial report is what gathers all the headlines, and then the dropping of these charges is what buried. You never hear it. Like,
yeah,
we're talking about this. We're not going to talk in 6 weeks if these charges are dropped that nothing happened. It feels unfair to the person because they're now tarred with this. And it might not be true.
Yeah, it marks their name. It, you know, they just remember the initial news story and then they forget about what happened afterwards. So.
Yeah, and I remember years ago, the Duke lacrosse team went through this thing where a woman came out and accused them all of gang raping her. And everyone jumped on them and said they should disband, that these kids should be kicked out of school, they should be put in jail, they should disband the program. And then a few weeks later, it came out that she made the whole thing up. And that, to me, that for personally was when I started going, you know what, we're a little too quick to judge people. Mm-hmm. Maybe we take a step back, wait for everything to come out. Like, if there's video, like, if this is a Ray Rice situation where we end up seeing video of this guy smacking around his female girlfriend or wife, I can't remember what it was, that's different. You have proof that, like, Ray Rice got killed for it because we saw what he did and it was despicable and deplorable and disgusting. So he deserved all the anger that was put at him before the courts ever adjudicated anything. This we don't know about. So it's just, as far as I know, this guy doesn't have a history of this. So again, I don't know. I feel kind of gross talking about it. So I really think we should just kind of move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
All right. So last thing before we get to our interview with Justin Dunk to talk about the draft, I want to talk about the negotiation list. I bring this up because a couple days ago, there was a little minor trade. Edmonton traded an offensive lineman to Saskatchewan for the rights to two negotiation list players. And this sort of sparked this debate of, should the neg lists be public? Because this is something that media members especially have been asking for years. We need to make these neg lists public. People should know who's on them and all this other sorts of stuff. And I can't come to an answer on which side. I see both sides, why they should remain private and why they should be public. But I'm starting to think now, should they just be abolished? Should we just get rid of them? Or is the idea of a negotiation list a relic from a bygone era? Like when NHL teams had territorial rights over players? Like, the Montreal Canadiens were so good for so long because any player that was born in Quebec, they had rights to. There was no draft or anything like that. Like, do you think maybe this is something that we should just get rid of and have American players who want to play in the CFL just allow themselves to be free agents and sign with the highest bidder.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I could. I think at least they should be public. You know, like, why not be public? It's not like salaries where they're disclosing, you know, how much a player makes, and they might not want that information out there. You know, it's just the rights to an American player that may not even ever come up here. So I don't see why they shouldn't be public. You know, it would make interesting talk between fans, between media members. So, you know, I at the very least, I think all the players should be public, who's on whose negotiation list, and just get that information out there so we can talk about it.
Okay, so I'll give you some reasons, and I'm not saying I necessarily agree with these reasons, but these are reasons I've kind of come up with as to why I don't think they should be made public. One is that these lists are very fluid. A guy could be on there on Tuesday and then off on Wednesday and replaced with someone else. And then you'd have coaches answering questions about why was so-and-so taken off the negotiation list? Why was so-and-so put on? And I don't really think that that's something that we really need answers to, honestly. Like, it's not a list of players who will play in the CFL. It's a list of guys, some of which are like pie-in-the-sky guys. Like, Tim Tebow is on Montreal's negotiation list. Johnny Manziel was on Hamilton's. Robert Griffin was on Hamilton's at one point as well. So it's like, I don't necessarily think that this is something that we need to really be debating all that much, because it's not, we would sit here and talk about player X, and we've done it. We did it with Tim Tebow before. We seem to every year talk about Will Tim people playing the CFL, and just after a while it's like, why are we talking about this possibility? Let's wait and see if he signs a contract. And the other is that, from my understanding, is once a player on a negotiation list contacts the team and says, I want to play in the CFL, the team has, I think it's 10 days in which to negotiate a contract, or else that player is now free. So I think Taj Boyd, who went to Clemson, was on Hamilton's negotiation list. He wanted to come up. The Ticats obviously didn't need quarterbacks at the time. They traded his rights to Winnipeg. Winnipeg signed him. He didn't end up lasting long. But the big one to me, I believe it was Rakeem Cato, was on Saskatchewan's negotiation list. They had a ton of quarterbacks, didn't need him. He said, I want to come play in the CFL. The Riders, I don't know if he asked for some astronomical number in order to not be able to sign the contract, but he didn't sign the contract, and he ends up in Montreal not very long after. So I just, there's too many, I think, negatives here that I don't necessarily know if we really need to know exactly who's on these lists.
You know, it'd just be an interesting thing to know. And, you know, I'm all for abolishing them as well. I mean, you know, you look at it and you think, you know, an American free agent player that has the opportunity should be able to sign with any CFL team they want to. You know, they're a free agent, right? So maybe they should just get rid of the whole negotiation list thing and just let the players sign with whatever team they want to. Let the player have the option, you know, to go through, you know, if Montreal is offering more money than Toronto or Hamilton's offering more money than Saskatchewan, that player should be able to sign with whomever they want. They shouldn't be restricted to one team because of the so-called they have the rights to that player. So yeah, I guess I'm for just abolishing the whole thing and just letting players sign wherever they want to sign.
I think that's where I'm sort of landing too. I think I understand why these were in play when there was no salary cap, because the richer teams or the teams in the bigger market could just offer the most salary, and then all the best players would go there. But there's a salary cap now. You're not going to go bring in an untested American player, sign him to, you know, a veteran like $100,000, $150,000 deal to bring him in if you've never seen him play before, because then that means you have to get rid of good players elsewhere. So I don't think we would have these massive bidding wars where we would see a guy like Rakeem Cato or like Tim Tebow, who would say, I'm coming to the CFL, and if he was free to sign anywhere, I don't think we would see him getting, you know, $300,000, $400,000 a year. I think we'd still see salaries be decent, maybe a little bit more than the initial rookie deals that we see. Like Jonathan Jennings, we talked about his contract, and he was making $50,000, $55,000, whatever the rookie minimum was, that's what he was making. We might see those numbers go up slightly, but I still think teams would be financially prudent and go, we got a cap to deal with. We're not going to go spend all this money on a guy that we don't know if he's going to play or not.
Do you think there should be like a franchise tag kind of thing where you could spend as much money as you wanted on a quarterback or one player that doesn't count towards the salary cap?
I'm going to say no, simply because I think the system we have now, it works. We've seen, since it's been implemented, I think every single team in the league has been to the Grey Cup. So in the last, like, when was the salary management system put in? Like 2007, 2008, sometime around there?
Yeah, I think so.
We've seen every team make the Grey Cup. So I think the point of it was that the league wanted every fan base to feel as if their team could make a run and go to the championship and win a championship. And in that time, we've seen pretty much every team win it, and we have seen every team get there. there. So I think the system's working as it is now. Maybe the salary cap should be raised. Actually, I think it definitely should be raised. Guys should make more money, but I don't really think that it's necessary to exempt anyone from the cap. I don't think I think the system works the way it is right now.
And you see teams making money now. You know, pretty much every team makes money. I mean, except for, you know, Toronto probably didn't make money last year. Montreal might have been, you know, who knows about them because they don't release the numbers. But you know that Hamilton did, you know, all the Western teams pretty much. So, you know, with this salary cap management in place, teams are becoming profitable. And like you said, everyone's competitive. Everyone seems to have a chance. So there's a lot of diversity there. And well, that's not the right word.
Parity.
There you go. Parity. That works. Yeah, that's work. So there's a lot of teams that are, you know, over the years, like you said, are making it to the Grey Cup and making a run. And the fans feel that they have a chance every year. So, yeah, I agree with you, actually.
Yeah, I want to say I think since 2010, every team has made the Grey Cup. I feel very confident in saying that. I don't think any team since 2010 has not played in a Grey Cup game. So we're talking five seasons and all nine teams have been to the finals. I think that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, the system is working.
Yeah, the system is working. All right, Mike. So you and I have talked rather frequently on the show about how our draft knowledge is not all that great, correct?
Yes, sir.
So I decided to reach out to someone who I think, personally, is the preeminent CFL draft expert that we have today. So on the line is none other than Three Down Nation's Sportsnet and CFL.ca's Justin Dunk. Justin, nice to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Fellas, thanks for having me on. I don't know if I would go with preeminent because Dwayne Ford might be the dean of the draft, but I appreciate the intro.
Well, he's not here, so we're giving you the title for now.
I'll take it.
All right. So before we talk about the draft, I don't know if people out there know this about you. They obviously know that you were a rather stellar player at the University of Guelph during your playing days in the CIS. You were a quarterback, set a lot of records, threw for a lot of yards, were a very good player. But before you got into sort of the media business, you did a little bit of an internship with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And that's where I remember you from. Very vividly remember your time with the team. I believe it was the 2011 season. So what can you tell us about your time working with the Ticats?
Yeah, you nailed it. This is sort of going back in the time machine to 2011. So I had a great opportunity with the team and through their internship program to be the staff writer and a video analyst for that 2011 season. And it really helped give me a lot of, you know, chops coming up in the business, learn just to how to act and be around pro players and what it was like. Because I'll tell you, that first year, especially the first couple months, I was nervous being around, you know, a Kevin Glenn or an Arland Bruce or a Jamal Johnson, some of these guys that were, you know, big-time athletes in the CFL. And it takes some getting used to in terms of being around those players, but you sort of just get to realize that they're people and just like you, really, just like the three of us are, right? So you kind of talk to them on the same level like that. And as for the internship, it was a great way to, you know, get a lot of experience writing. I was writing about the team every single day. I was doing some video work as well. So it was just a really good opportunity to not only be around football every day, but to be covering it and writing about it, which is ultimately where a path that I followed.
Your time there was different than pretty much every other writers they had there, because I know they hire like a sideline reporter, video person, and then they usually hire a writer. But you were actually on camera a bunch. You did, what was it called, Dunks, Quick Reads, or Snap Decisions, something like that. You did the video.
I can't even remember the name, but you're right.
I do remember that, because I remember you being on there and being like, oh, the writer's actually on the videos, and that was something that we hadn't seen before, and I'm pretty sure we haven't seen since. Was that your idea? Was it the team's idea? Do you really remember how that came about?
Yeah, it was a bit of both. I had some interest to develop those sort of skills, and they thought with my background in football, obviously you said off the top, having played for 5 years at the University of Guelph as a quarterback, that it could be a good fit, and it could help get some more content up on the site. I mean, if I look back at those videos now, I could probably point at myself and laugh pretty good to see how maybe awkward I was at the time because I was so raw. But it was just sort of on both sides, and it ended up fitting well. And I'm really appreciative of that opportunity to develop those skills in particular.
It's funny you say that, because Mike and I have been doing this show now for about a year and a half, and I've gone back and listened to those earlier episodes, and I cringe at how stilted we sound and how it's just – and it's kind of the same with writing. I've gone back and read some things that I've written, and you just you don't realize how well you're progressing, but you kind of just progress and get better just through doing. And I can only imagine. I kind of wish I could go back and watch them. I don't know if the team still has them up on the website or anything, but it'd be kind of funny to kind of relive that when you were there and you're just looking at it going like, oh, why did I say that? Why did I do this? It would be kind of hilarious.
Yeah, funny might be one word. Embarrassing would be another word. Going back in time, but I know what you mean. And I'm a guy, and I think just like you guys are, that really likes to improve as much as I can, you know, from day to day and month to month and year to year. So it would be kind of cool to go back and look at, you know, as you said, your old podcast or your old writing, just to see how far you've come. And it's really key in development just to get reps in, I believe.
Okay, so you've been doing work for Sportsnet, CFL.ca, and now you've come on. You did some stuff with Three Down Nation before, but now you're on the team. You and I are teammates essentially.
Yes, sir.
So, but when you started, I remember reading your stuff, especially, you know, when you were at the Ticats and when you were Sportsnet, you weren't really always focused on the draft. You weren't, what, you know, quote unquote, a draft guy. Now, like I said, I think you're one of the best out there. You mentioned Dwayne Ford. He is obviously awesome as well. Not taking anything away from him, but what was it, how did you come about to be sort of focused on the draft and the draft process and the combine and all that? Where was the impetus for getting into that as opposed to just staying with like the rest of just general CFL stuff?
Well, I was always interested in the draft as a kid. I mean, football specifically, obviously. I remember trying to always be in a spot where I could. I grew up in the country just outside of Guelph, Ontario. So I remember we didn't have cable out there, but a couple of my buddies had satellite dishes. So they got ESPN somehow. Still to this day, it was like a miracle that they had it. And I remember trying to always, you know, set up with that friend that I could be at his house on the day of the draft. They didn't really care draft was going on, but I knew I wanted to watch it. And I can remember back in those days watching Mel Kiper, and just over the years thinking that every league, essentially every player, comes in via the draft. I mean, there's obviously outliers and some guys that come in as free agents, but the draft is really the lifeblood of any franchise. And I just thought it was really cool to see a guy and evaluate a player from when he's a prospect and then watch how he grows in a pro league, and also see how he's evaluated and see where he's picked and then how he's seen based on where he's picked, because it's totally different if you come into a league as a first rounder compared to a fifth rounder, as you guys know. So that's really where my interest in the draft started. And then obviously, you know, I was writing about the Ticats for the entire year, and I got fortunate to get the opportunity after that year to write for CFL.ca. And I can remember going back, I was pitching some ideas for some articles to CFL.ca. Actually, Jamie Stein was one of the main editors of CFL.ca at the time, and the East-West Bowl was coming up, and I thought, well, there's really not a lot of coverage, or back in that time, there wasn't a lot of coverage on the Canadian prospects coming up. So the East-West Bowl was happening. I thought, you know, maybe it would be cool to have some sort of a list where fans can track the upcoming CFL prospects in the final year of their CIS season. I know this is a long-winded answer, but this is how I got into it. So I made this list, and I believe the first ever list I made had Ben Heenan at number one the year before he was going to go into the draft. So there's a top 10. I mean, the back end of the list wasn't so good because it hadn't developed as many sources at that point, but I remember Ben Heenan being number one, and I thought it could be a cool way for fans to track these guys in their last year of the season and then coming around up into their draft year. So that's how I got started, and then the following year I was at the combine and just sort of been rolling from there.
Awesome, awesome. Mike, Justin and I have been conversing here for too long. Get in there with a question, buddy.
Now, getting into this year's draft, Justin, in your latest mock draft, you have three of the offensive linemen from the Rouge Or going in the first round. Do you remember a time when three players from the same team have gone in the first round, or is that a first-time thing for the CFL draft?
That's testing me. The school that would jump to mind, the only other school in recent memory that would jump to mind, would be the University of Calgary. There was a year a few years back where Anthony Parker and Nathan Coolhorn went in the first round. I don't know if there was another guy there, but the UFC might be the most recent example of having at least multiple first round picks. Actually, you can even look back to last year with Laurier. We saw Laurier had Chris Sackey and S.A. I'll just call him S.A., the defensive lineman from Laurier. I think you guys know why.
Yeah, I remember when he got drafted, I butchered his name. It was like, I was trying to read it phonetically, and I was just like, you know what? We're going to call him Steve or something like that. Because I have no idea how to pronounce his name.
I'm with you guys. I just call him Messi. I think it's the easiest way. But there's been, in recent memory, there's been guys, schools with multiple first-round picks. But three, you'd have to go back and check the history books. I don't think it's happened too often.
Sticking with the draft, we're now, let's get right into this. Mike, great first question. I've seen some people come out and say that this year's draft class is not as star-studded as last year's. I remember they changed the rules for the draft, the eligibility rules last year, so there were a lot more guys in it. So I personally have been paying a lot more attention to sort of the draft process this year than I have in seasons past. I watched a lot of the combine stuff that you yourself were involved in over that weekend back in February or March, whenever it was. I can't remember. My memory is fading on me. So I've seen some guys, and I'm just wondering, do you also view this year's draft crop as less, say, not talented, because I think all these players are talented, but say less star-studded than in maybe last year?
I don't think so. I think there are stars in this draft. I think the big difference for me when you look at the 2015 draft compared to this year's class is the depth of it. I think at the top of the 2016 draft, there's a lot of talent. In the first three rounds, teams are pretty excited to get their hands on these guys. There's some guys in the third round that, you know, could possibly develop into starters down the line. Whereas in 2015, there was guys you were getting in, you know, the fourth, fifth, and sixth, even the seventh round, that we saw contribute. Blair Smith was a linebacker last year out of Angelo State. That was a seventh round pick by Edmonton, and he was one of the top guys in the league last year in terms of special teams tackle. So the depth of the 2015 draft was really good. The 2016 class isn't quite there in terms of the depth, but I think the star power is still there. I mean, at the top of this draft, we have, obviously, David Onyemata was drafted into the NFL, but he's a really good player. And we have four guys who were signed to NFL undrafted free agent contracts as priority players, so they might not go as high in this draft, but there's still some really good high-end talent in this draft with the top tier of offensive linemen and some of the receivers as well. There's a couple good linebackers and some defensive backs, which I'm sure we'll get into more detail here.
Okay, so you mentioned receivers. Now, I am an unabashed receivers whore. I love Canadian receivers. Last year during the draft, when Lamar Durant fell and the Ticats were about to pick, being a giant Ticats fan, I was like, holy crap, they're going to get this guy. And they didn't, and they ended up drafting 900 linebackers, and I went on a bit of a mini rant. But that's neither here nor there. But I love Canadian receivers. I don't really know why. I just do. Now this year, there seems to be quite a few that are the names that we know. Brian Jones, Doug Corby. You know, the list goes on and on. So out of all these receivers that you've looked at through this draft process, who do you think? Maybe give a couple names that you think might make the biggest impact in the CFL.
Well, first of all, I think it depends on which team they go to, Josh. I think that has a huge role to play in who can make an impact. Now, as you said, there's some talented guys, Brian Jones, Joan Verskaesen, Levi Noel, Tavon Smith, you know, would have been a high pick had he not signed a deal with the Colts. There's maybe a more little-known kid out of Southern University in Mike Jones, who is just, he's an absolute burner, and he's played at a high level of speed, at least down in the SWAC conference, in America. So there's a lot of good receivers here, and I'm forgetting there's a, you know, local product out of Burlington, Brett Blasco. Felix Faubert-Lucier is a guy that can maybe play in the slot and play a little bit of H-back for you. And we've been missing Shaq Johnson, who ran a 4.39 at the combine. So I know that's a lot of names to throw at people, but it just speaks to the depth of receiver in this class. Now, as for impact players, right away you would have to think the bigger players would have a better chance to make an impact maybe in year one or year two, like a Brian Jones, but he's unfortunately suffered a broken scaphoid bone, which is a small bone in your wrist. So that might bump him down a little bit, bump him down the draft board, and might not allow him to get off to as fast as a start as you would have liked. I sort of refer to Jones as a new age Andy Fantuz. He's 6'4", 233, and he ran a 4.69, which is pretty good for his weight. He's vertical 34 inches, so this guy can move, and he's big. I think he was highly coveted around the league. There were some conversations that I heard about Brian Jones being in the discussion for the number one overall pick, but that was prior to his broken skateboard injury.
Wow. Okay, Mike, I promise I'm going to let you get some more questions in here, but Justin, you brought up one name that intrigues me, and that is Levi Noel. Now, the reason I'm intrigued by him is that he went to U of T, which is my alma mater. Obviously, the football program there, as you well know, has not been great. Now, I know he played there for a couple of years, and then there was some academic problems, and he ended up playing in Windsor somewhere. So I'm kind of interested in him simply because we went to the same school. What do you think about him? What do you think his prospects are like? Obviously, you mentioned that team-specific where he goes will obviously play a role in it, but what do you see him skill-wise? Where do you look at him in, maybe in the future?
Well, the first thing that jumps out to me about Lavai is what scouts say in terms of his ability to be able to contribute on special teams right away as a receiver, which is rare. And that really is going to push him up the board. You know, I would be shocked to see Lavai come off the board in maybe that late first round. I think he's a very solidified second round type of guy for that fact that he can help you right away on special teams. And as you said, I think he can develop in your offense to a slot receiver that can make plays. He's got a big body that he's grown into. If you look at some pictures of this guy from the combine that Johanny Juju just took, who's a great photographer for the CFL, this guy's chiseled. He's got a man's body. He's sort of ready to roll right now. For him, it'll just be a matter of how quickly does he pick up the playbook. But I think he's a guy that could make an impact at the receiver position pretty early on.
Awesome. There's not enough former varsity Blues in the CFL, so I'm glad to hear that this kid might have a rather solid future. Okay, Mike, I've done a lot of talking. Let's get you in there. What questions you got for Mr. Dunk?
Yeah, just shut up, Josh. you mentioned the four undrafted signings in the NFL earlier. Out of those four guys, who do you see sticking in the NFL and maybe one or two guys that you see coming back to the CFL to play?
We'll sort of go year by year with this. So if you look at the 2015 class, Tyler Varga and Brett Boyko were two perfect examples of this situation. They both signed undrafted free agent contracts, Varga with the Colts, Boyko with the Eagles, and each of them spent that entire year with those respective teams. So I think if we look at Tavon Smith, Arjun Colquhoun, Eli Buka, and Mehdi Abdesmat, who all signed priority undrafted free agent contracts, which means right after that draft was over, teams were calling them. They all had multiple offers. They all got signing bonuses. So that tells you that there's a pretty high interest in those players. Tavon Smith had a number of offers in particular. I believe it was five or more. Mehdi Abdesmat sort of had his choosing as well. Colquhoun chose from the Seahawks and the Browns, but he ended up going to Dallas because he felt it was the best spot for him. So it just tells you a bit about their interest. So I think these are guys that probably make not the 53-man roster, the final 53-man roster in the NFL in 2016, but probably are on a practice roster. That said, you know, if they have a good camp, they could make the 53. We saw Varga make the 53 last year in Indianapolis. So I think these are guys that are probably in the NFL for at least a year, which in my mind drops them out of that CFL first round, most likely.
All right, now I just wanted to ask you about a running back, one of the prospects, Mercer Timmons. Do you see him as a starting running back in the CFL one day, or maybe even a star?
Well, there's been a lot of buzz about Timmons through this process, and scouts really wanted to get a time on him because he didn't test at the 2015 East-West Bowl. So he comes to the 2016 Combine, and, you know, some people say 40s don't matter. Some people say they do. He runs a 4.7, which I think lowered his stock a little bit. But he's shown over the years at the University of Calgary that he's been a playmaker. But granted, that was largely behind an offensive line that saw a lot of players go to the CFL. That was behind, you know, guys like Suk Chung, who was a number two overall pick last year, behind Sean McEwen, who was a number three pick last year. So those are two studs that he had the ability to run behind. I believe he also played with Kirby Fabian as well. There's a few other guys I'm missing, but so if just sort of think about that, he ran behind a very good offensive line. That's not to take anything away from Mercer because he's a very talented back, but that sort of all goes into this evaluation. Now, as for will he be a star, I hate to give you a non-answer here, but I think that's still to be determined. It depends on the team that he goes to and how he develops. He needs to probably put a little bit of weight onto his frame if he's going to be a feature running back. And he does run a little high. Some have compared him to Jesse Lumsden, but he's a tall guy. So, of course, he's going to run a little bit higher. As for him making an impact as a running back, I can see it. The skills are there. The traits are there. It's just what team does he go to and how do they see him? Do they view him as a guy that can be an Andrew Harris or John Cornish type, or do they view him more as a sort of a backup Canadian running back in the mold of an Anthony Winston guy like that?
Keep going, Mike.
All right.
You told me to shut up, so you might as well keep talking.
Yeah, we've seen the Montreal program and the CIS come on pretty strong in the last couple of years, winning the Vanier Cup last year. Do you see them as, you know, becoming the strongest team in the Quebec Conference, or is the Rouge et Or still the big dog in that division?
Well, I think they're both big dogs now. I think Montreal's proven that the last couple of years by beating Laval in the Dunsmore Cup. That's just the product of, I think, Montreal getting better and getting on the same level with Laval, and I think it's really going to be a dogfight there. I don't think you can put one program over the other at the moment. I mean, obviously, Laval has gone out and won a ton of Vanier Cups. Montreal has won. But what Danny Machocha is doing there at Montreal is pretty impressive with where he's taken this program in terms of putting it on the same footing with Laval.
Excellent. Now, hey, Josh, you really are shutting up over there now.
Okay, do you want me to go then? All right, I got one for you, buddy. This year, we just saw recently, I believe you actually broke the story for Three Down Nation, that the draft is moving from 7 rounds to 8. What do you think is the reason behind this? Did you hear anything as to why they're doing it, or do you just have some speculation? I'm just curious as to, this kind of came out of nowhere really close to draft day, and it's kind of an interesting development.
Yeah, it did. And thanks, Josh. I was fortunate enough to get the news and break it on Three Down Nation on Monday. And I think the reasoning behind it is to get another Canadian into camp as a non-counter. So in layman's terms, that means you can have a drafted player, or all of your drafted players for that matter, can be in your training camp, and they don't count towards your roster number until the end of camp. There's always those cut down days where you have to be at a certain number by this date and this date and this date, but those draft players do not count until you're making up your final roster. So what it does is gets, ideally or hypothetically, one extra player in your training camp that you can see in a football setting over a long period of time.
Now, just kind of a funny question here. You have contact with Drew Edwards quite a bit. What's going on with that beard? Has he been living in the woods in the off season or what?
Whoa. There's nothing wrong with having a giant beard, gentlemen. He looks fantastic. I just want to put that out there. I love it. I was tired of being the only lumberjack looking dude on Three Down Nation. I'm happy he's joined the cause.
I will say Josh's beard game is on point. Drew sort of came out of nowhere. You know, I hadn't seen him in person for a little while, and then all of a sudden his beard pictures popped up, and I thought, did you, you know, go into hibernation, or did he just all of a sudden grow this beard out of nowhere with Miracle-Gro or something like that? But I will say he does look good, but, you know, getting into the summer months here, you got to think that thing's getting itchy, and it's got to be pretty hot. I mean, Josh, you have to know this. Can it be?
It can. I usually go the entire winter without trimming mine. So say sometime around Thanksgiving, our Thanksgiving, I'll put the clippers away and they won't come out until actually around this time of year, beginning of May. Because yeah, once that sweat starts pouring in, you're sitting at home lying on the couch and that beard is touching your chest and it's just, the sweat just pools there. It's actually kind of disgusting. And that's when you realize, you know what, it's time to go get the clippers back out and shear that. I'm kind of curious. I hope he keeps it for a while, at least until training camp, because I got to think that some of the TICAP players, especially like a guy like Simone Lawrence, is going to see that and go like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, I would think if they saw that beard, especially Simone, wouldn't have any problem ripping on Drew a little bit.
Yeah, I would really look forward to seeing any sort of first reactions that some of those guys, as like especially a guy like Simone, would have with that. So back to the draft. I know you just came out with a mock draft. I'm not sure if that's going to be your final one before Tuesday's draft, or if you're gonna do another one.
There'll be one more.
Okay, Tuesday, so I'm not gonna ask you to give away the whole first round. That would be unfair. We want people to go to CFL.ca, get those clicks out there and read your stuff, because it's excellent as always. But as we sit here today, who do you think is going to go number one overall in the draft?
Ooh, well, the latest mock draft had Josiah St. John at number one to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Now, I won't go into too much detail here, but I'll tell you that might change by the time my final mock comes out, for a number of reasons that I'll just tease here. So keep your eyes on CFL.ca. Right now, I think there's Josiah certainly in the conversation, but I feel like there are some talks going on and some shifting possibly in that decision. So little, I know it's a little bit of tease and not quite an answer you're looking for, but I think that could change based on what I'm hearing at the moment. We'll know more sort of as this process plays out over the weekend.
Hey, we're all about teases here. Last week, we were talking about possibly having a guest on, and I've been on Twitter all week being very cryptic about who we were going to get this week. Obviously, it's you, as you well know, because it's you're here. So we're all about the little nuggets of information and not giving everything away. So no problems doing that here, pal.
Now, speaking of the number one pick, do you see there's been some talk that the Riders might trade their number one pick. Do you see that happening in this draft?
Yeah, well, for me, there's a lot of difference between talk and action, fellas. You know, I'm about, you know, if you're going to talk about it, do it sort of thing. And I think all the talk surrounding that number one pick right now is just talk. You know, have there been discussions between teams and the Riders? Yes, of course. That's just obvious to me. You know, it just wouldn't be smart if you weren't, you know, seeing what was out there, seeing if someone might overwhelm you for that number one overall pick. Now, it's a whole other conversation as to whether those talks have intensified or grown serious. And I don't think we're at the point right now, as of this recording on Thursday morning, that we're going to see the pick moved for a sort of blow me out of the water offer. If the Riders want to recoup some picks that they've lost in some trades here in the offseason and maybe not get what they have as a price tag on that number one overall pick, then I think we could see it move. But I don't think it's going to be for a knock you off your seat kind of offer.
Let's get into the Ticats stuff. We are a Ticats focused podcast, so we can't let you get out of here without asking you about what they will do in the draft. So I got two questions for you. The first one is, obviously in your most recent mock draft, you had them taking Northern Illinois, I believe, wide receiver Jordan Breskason.
Yes, sir. You got it.
Do you think that, so is that your, again, I don't want you to give away too much of your mock draft. Is that where you think they're going? Is it Breskason, or do you think they're going receiver, or are you going to tease us again and maybe say that could change once again in the one that's going to be released before Tuesday's draft?
Yeah, I won't tease too much here. I think, you know, everything is obviously fluid. And Breskason is a bit of a late riser here in this process. I mean, a guy that is talented, was consistently productive at Northern Illinois, and certainly could be a target for the Ticats at 5. In my previous mock draft, I had Brian Jones going to Hamilton at 5, and I think before that wrist injury, there was a good chance that if Brian Jones was still on the board, that Hamilton could pick him up at 5, because if you look at their Canadian receivers right now, Andy Fantuz is obviously getting up there in age. They did re-sign him, but when Andy Fantuz goes out of the lineup, they lack an impact Canadian receivers. I know, you know, they had Spencer Watt and he had the Achilles injury last year, and you're probably not sure he's going to come back after that. And he's been a solid player. But Andy Fantuz is obviously, you know, on a different level. So I think they're looking for a guy like that and in that same sort of mold, a big physical slot receiver. And Brian Jones could be that. Juwan Breskason could as well. I think the dilemma the Ticats will have in the first round is, you know, do we pick the top highest rated offensive lineman, or they feel like those positions are okay depth-wise and they can get a guy in the second or third round and take that top-tier receiver.
Okay, so where, obviously you mentioned the offensive line. I speculated last week that maybe a guy like Taylor Loeffler might be into the conversation because of the injury to Craig Butler, and now that creates some potential ratio problems in the secondary. What other areas, and outside of the first round, or even inside of the first round, do you see the team focusing on? Is it really receiver, offensive line, and then maybe some secondary help if they can find it?
Yeah, the Ticats in recent years, Josh, and I think you know this well, haven't really targeted specific areas. They'll literally take, and it's kind of a cliche or boring answer, but they'll literally take the best player available. Yes, the Craig Butler injury happened, but you know, I think they're probably going to shift Courtney Stephen back to safety. They have Mike Daly there for some depth at the position as well. So I don't think they're going to look in any one specific situation based on needs. They're just going to get whoever the best player is possible, and if that happens to be at one of those positions, you know, all the better. Do I think some of those guys like a Taylor Loeffler are in play? Yes, but only if it fits where they have him rated on their board and where they're drafting at that time.
All right, Mike, do you have anything left to ask Justin?
Well, I just wanted to ask you, I remember watching you play for Guelph on TV a couple of times, and you were, you know, quite a scrambler when you were a quarterback. And I just wondered, who was some of your favorite CFL quarterbacks growing up to watch?
Well, number one by a long shot, I don't even have to name anyone else, would have to be Doug Flutie. by far. I remember watching him when he was playing with the Argos, back when the CFL was being covered by CBC, and just seeing some of the things. Like, he was like a magician, you know, and he was a smaller quarterback. It was just watching what he could do on the field was freaking magical, man. And he was one of the guys that, I don't want to say I patterned my game after, but that I enjoyed watching and that I thought was a really cool and fun player to see.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that Doug Flutie was probably the guy we all sort of gravitated towards. Like you said, he was just something else.
Oh, was he ever, man. Just a treat to watch. He's worth the price of admission and then some.
Absolutely. So that's pretty much it, Justin. I got to thank you so much for coming on and educating us on this draft process. I feel as if I know a heck of a lot more than I did just half an hour ago.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate all the kind words. And it was fun coming on, man. It should have probably happened sooner. But I'm always happy to talk drafts. So anytime you want, let me know.
You are our draft guy. We will have you on. If we don't get you on throughout the year, we'll definitely have you on every year around this time. You're going to be our go-to guy for as long as you want to be. So is there any plugs you want to make, places where people can find your writing, Twitter, whatever have you? Just go nuts.
Yeah, so Josh, as you said, you can check out 3Down Nation. We'll have some draft stuff up there. I just have a piece up on Dylan Guy, the offensive lineman, who's a Hamilton native, went to the University of Buffalo, and how he's coming along in his knee rehab. And then, you know, going forward, just keep a lock to CFL.ca and 3Down Nation for all the latest on the draft. If anything breaks, trades, all that stuff. And on draft day, I'll be with the CFL.ca crew analyzing the picks as they come in.
All right, that is great. Thank you very much for coming on, Justin, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Sounds good, fellas. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Justin.
So I would once again like to thank Justin Dunk for probably the 50th time today for coming on the show. I feel like I learned an awful lot. How about you?
Yeah, it was a good interview. I didn't have a lot of knowledge going into this draft, but now I feel like when I watch it, I will have a lot more knowledge than I did before.
Yeah, I feel like going into Tuesday's draft, when I sit down to watch it, I'm going to feel informed, and that feels pretty good. So before we get out of here, let's make some small predictions. Any player you think that you're going to see in black and gold come Tuesday? Well, but you know what? Let me make it simple. Who do you think the Ticats are going to draft first overall? Or, like, with their first round pick?
Well, I'm going to go with Dunk's pick in his latest mock draft. And Juwan Briscannon, I believe his name is from Northern Illinois, the receiver. So I'm going to go with his expertise and pick who he picked in his latest mock draft.
Okay. See, that little tease that he gave us about maybe having his mock draft change with who's going number one. I'm curious to see where he's going with that. Is he saying that because he thinks that there's going to be a deal that's going to be made? Is he saying that maybe is this guy who he had number one, Josiah St. John, is he going to fall? A lot of moving parts here. I would have taken Taylor Loeffler because of, like I said to him, about the loss of Craig Butler, but he was on point saying the Ticats don't draft for need, they draft the best player available. So you know what I'm going to go with? This is kind of out there. I'm going to go with Philip Gagnon, the offensive lineman from Laval. He has him right now going to the Argos at number four. I'm going to say because of whatever he thinks is going to happen at the top of this draft with the number one overall pick, there's going to be a change there. I think that's going to slide everyone down the board, and I think the Ticats are going to go offensive lineman because you can never have enough good Canadian offensive linemen. So we'll come back next time and we'll see if our picks were correct. You got Briscannon from Northern Illinois and I got Gagnon from Laval.
Yeah, you can never go wrong drafting an offensive lineman in the Canadian draft. So
Calgary does it every year and they are, as far as I'm concerned, the model franchise in CFL. So the more you can copy Calgary, the better.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so that's it for this week. Excellent show. I hope everyone out there really enjoys the interview with Justin. Hey, if you want to see if someone come on the show, like, hit us up and we'll see what we can do. We've gotten two guys who a year ago I didn't think we'd ever be talking to on the show, and we were able to get them. So keep them coming. No player, no person is too pie in the sky for us. We will try to make it happen. So if you want to send questions, you can also send requests for guests. I'm curious to see who people would want there. Jeff Reinbold was a very popular pick to get on the show, and as when we did the interview, I could see why. The guy's a massive storyteller. This, to me, bringing in Justin was my idea because I wanted to learn more about the draft, and I think we're all the better for it. You and I both as hosts, and everyone out there who listens to the show as listeners, I think, will be going into the draft on Tuesday with a lot more information than they would have had if we didn't get Justin on the show.
Yeah, it makes me more excited to watch this thing.
Yeah, same here. So, Don't forget that you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you don't have iTunes, you can get it on podbean.com or by downloading the Podbean app on your mobile device. If you, like I said, you want some questions answered or you want to give a guest request, you can hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, give him your Twitter handle.
Mike_Ticats.
And I'm Josh_Smith_82. Of course, you can give us those requests and questions in the comments section of Three Down Nation. We didn't do questions this week because of the interview with Justin, but we're still taking them. And the next time we get together in a week or two or whenever it happens to be, we will answer those questions. Do not worry. So that is Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.